All right, everybody, welcome. This is a big day here in Mississippi. We are less than 24 hours after the state legislature has voted overwhelmingly to remove the Mississippi state flag and create a process to put up a new one. My name is Jake McGraw of the Winter Institute and Rethink Mississippi, and I am here with my colleagues, Duran Herbert and Vaughn Gordon. And we are providing some thoughts and some recap on what has happened. I think all of our heads are still spinning over this, but it's undoubtedly an exciting moment here in Mississippi. I don't think there's any reason to be impartial about it. This is a big deal. It's historic, and so we want to take some time and talk through it and see if we can make sense of how we got here and where we're going. So, fellas, let's start off. Just give me a few thoughts. How does this feel?
Well, I'll tell you, this has been, it's felt like a roller coaster the last couple of days. Since I was a freshman in college back in 1998, there were always felt like movements afoot to get the flag changed. 2001, we thought that there was some momentum to do it and to be here today and the plan is in place. I mean, I think all but the governor's signature. It is exciting in a way to think that, you know, I'm be buried in Mississippi and not have that flag flying over me. It's a small thing, but it's a significant thing. So there's a level of satisfaction with it. There's also a little bit of melancholy just because this is, in a lot of ways, it's a very small step. And we've got some much, much bigger steps that we need to take to realize our potential as a state. So a lot of excitement, but also a little melancholy there, or melancholy would be the best word, but it's like the first one that comes to mind to kind of describe the feeling. So that's what I'm feeling like right now.
I think, you know, this is just basically another manifestation of what we've seen in a broader society, overall shift away from this, you know, strong emphasis on white superiority. And the flag, it was one of those symbols that, you know, for African Americans, it stood for something that is traumatic to our lived experience. And so for the state to actually be taking that step, I think it's a solid step. However, you know, there's so much more to be done. There's so much more things that are actually practical on the ground that needs to be handled outside of these symbolic changes. But I feel like it's momentum in the right direction.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, yeah, both of y'all spoke to that. I mean, there is a disconnect here, a tension. It is, in some ways, it feels like the culmination of 126 years of sacrifice and effort. And at the same time, all we've really done is changed the piece of cloth that flies over the courthouses in this state. You know, so I think that you know, trying to put this in the right context, it's easy to know how to feel about this. Like, it feels good. It is something that puts us, you know, it's a positive move, but, you know, it's that context, putting it in proportion is really difficult. And so I've, you know, you kind of see that it seems actually on both sides of this debate, where folks have both tried to build it up and as well as minimize the importance of it. So, you know, with that said, I want to spend a little time kind of talking about how we got here, going through this history. It's something for Native Mississippians, myself and Vaughn on this webcast. You know, as you said, like we've known about this. This has been, you know, a really painful thorn in our sides from a young age. So yeah, I want to kind of talk about how we got here, but then really focus on the last 3 weeks where we saw something definitive really shift on this. So one of the benefits about this debate has been that, you know, if you are interested in history, there's been a lot of history out there to consume. A lot of people have really gone in and done the excavation and tried to figure out the origins of this flag and so many other monuments and symbols that we still live with. The Mississippi flag was adopted in 1894, 29 years after after Appomattox. But in many ways, it was it symbolized the victory, the Confederate victory, not in war but in peace. A 3-decade project after the end of the Civil War to end the Reconstruction project that had brought citizenship rights, at least to black men, had brought black elected leadership to the South, had given access to education. You saw the white backlash to that. 1875 in Mississippi, through an organized terror campaign, white Confederates are able to retake control of the state legislature, begin purging black elected leaders, and in 1890 call a constitutional convention, create the system, what's known as the Mississippi system, but really became the basis for Jim Crow across the South. In 1894, you have an all-white legislature that decides that they want to really make this official, both not just legally, but also psychologically. And so they choose to put the Confederate battle flag on the state flag of Mississippi. What's interesting, and an interesting little quirk of history, is that when they were rewriting the state code in 1906, they forgot to insert the statute that... sorry, they forgot to set. Can y'all hear me?
Yeah.
Sorry, I was getting some feedback. I'll try to cut that out. In 1906, when they updated the state code, they forgot to insert the statute that included the state flag. And so from 1906 to 2001, Mississippi actually didn't have legally a state flag. That wasn't something that anybody discovered until the 1990s when the NAACP sued the state of Mississippi over the flag. And the court, looking at the law, said there is actually no law. And so that kicked it to the legislature to decide what the state flag of Mississippi would be. The 1894 flag that was still being flown, nobody had realized that it had been forgotten, been left out of the state code. But it also created an opportunity for Mississippi to choose a new flag. That decision was given to the legislature, and the legislature at the time decided that they didn't want any part of it, and so they kicked it to the voters of Mississippi, decided that there would be a referendum. They created a 17-member commission to design and choose an alternative flag design. That commission was led by Governor Winter, our namesake at the Winter Institute, and our hero. And over the course of 2001, there was a intense vitriolic campaign to decide whether Mississippi would maintain the 1894 flag, put it back into the laws of the state of Mississippi, or whether we would choose a new one that didn't include the Confederate battle flag. When it came to a vote, the voters of Mississippi chose to keep the Confederate battle flag on the flag by a 2-1 margin. This is the same time that the state of Georgia, which had also had been the other state that had the Confederate battle flag as part of its state flag, their legislature had taken it off. There was controversy in South Carolina, which had flown a Confederate flag over its state house. South Carolina had decided to take down the Confederate flag from over its state house. They relocated it to to another part of the state house grounds, but Mississippi's resolute decision to keep that Confederate flag put us out of step with other southern states. And it also really put a dagger in the hearts of a lot of folks that had been very hopeful that Mississippi would choose to change its flag, that thought that we were ready to leave the days of Jim Crow behind and pick a new symbol for the state. The debate was even though the victory had secured that flag, at least for a generation, there was a price to be paid by people who had supported changing the flag. Governor Musgrove at the time, who had come out in support of changing the flag, lost his reelection campaign in 2003 to Haley Barbour. Barbour had used the slogan. One of his slogans was "Keep the flag, change the governor." Musgrove's support of that change in the flag was largely attributed to, or was one of the reasons why it was defeated. It came up again in the 2008 Senate race when Musgrove was running against Roger Wicker. So there was a long tail to these things and a long memory. And I know that, you know, Governor Winter himself, who is the most optimistic man you'll ever meet, I don't believe he ever thought that he would live to see the day when Mississippi would change its flag after seeing just how vicious the backlash was in 2001. So what's changed since then? What led us to this point? Well, I think that you really started to see the flag come back up for public debate in Mississippi in 2015 after the massacre of the 9 black parishioners at Mother Emanuel Church in Charleston, South Carolina. South Carolina, which had taken that Confederate flag above its state house and moved it to another location on the state house grounds, they took that flag down, moved it to their state history museum. Mississippi, I think a lot of folks were hoping that we might use that opportunity. It's hard to say that you know, a moment that folks paid for with their lives was an opportunity, but people were hoping that was the moment in which Mississippi would finally listen to its better angels and change. And so there was a public outcry. A lot of prominent Mississippians spoke out again, calling for the state to change its flag. But very few of the state's elected leaders signed on. The one exception was Philip Gunn, the Speaker of the House, the Republican Speaker of the House, who came out after Charleston saying that Mississippi should change its flag, and who faced a lot of resistance. That old slogan against Musgrove got dusted off. And so instead of saying, "Keep the flag, change the governor," they said, "Keep the flag, change the speaker." So, but even with the speaker's support, there was never enough legislative support to move a flag bill. They were introduced in every session after that, never even got brought up in committee. But you did see a grassroots movement across the state. Cities were choosing to take down the flag from public property. Every university in the state took the flag down. And people around the state and businesses started to run up alternative flags, the Magnolia flag, as well as the Stennis flag. And so you really saw people starting to use their limited visibility to try to show that they were in support of changing the flag. But that's where it stood until 3 weeks ago, after the death of George Floyd and the Black Lives Matter protests that have swept the country, including coming here to Mississippi, the flag became, it became another, this came under scrutiny once again. So I want to really dig in and talk about what's happened over the last 3 weeks, the organizing, and really, you know, what do we think has led to this moment? Vaughn, you work with young people, with high school students primarily. Can you talk a little bit about kind of what you've seen and how young people have been really leading on this and other issues?
Yeah, man, definitely. Listen, I'm so glad of the three of us, you drew the short straw to have to go through all that history. But it's really, really necessary. It's really important that we have that context. One of the things that previous generations have done really well with people, to an extent, I mean, you and I are not like super young anymore. Jay's not super young anymore. So perhaps we have done this as well. We've talked about our values. We talked about core values and principles and the importance of believing in things and being willing to kind of be activated around those things. So we've done that, right? We've got a couple of generations of people doing that. And our young people have taken that to heart. I mean, I've heard people say or write, certainly the last few years, that many of our institutions or our quote-unquote norms have been under attack, or just they don't seem as permanent as they once might have. And so I think our young people are sensing that that lack of stability, if you will, and as opposed to kind of shrinking in that moment in fear, they are seizing it to kind of make values, make public goods more stable. The deaths of George Floyd and Breonna Taylor and so many others who got varying degrees of media coverage, I think served to lift up like just humanity without like the hyphens of where, you know, we're from or any of that, just like humanity. And a lot of the young folks that I talked to, I mean, they were deeply by some of the insensitivity or lack of respect for the dignity of those people who we watched die. I mean, we like had to believe our eyes. We couldn't explain it away. And in the context of the coronavirus and this huge public health pandemic, like that heightens our own sense of like mortality. And so I think you put these things together with a group of young people who have a clear vision for where they want to go, or if not that, the kind of society they want to live in that is more equitable, that rejects white supremacy or any other form of oppression, and you get a kind of, you get some really amazing drum majors. And I think they stepped out front of these parades that have slowly gained steam from 2001 to all the years before. Like we had some drum majors who were just like not going to leave a corner unturned. Like they were going to march. And frankly, I mean, a really personal example of what that was like. I mean, I grew up, I've lived in places where there were protests. And I was not always in the middle of the street during the protest. For, you know, personal health reasons, I've taken the coronavirus very, very seriously. But I see this Instagram post from one of our young people, right? One of our young leaders who's been through our program and has such more clarity about what's happening and what needs to be done. And she says, we're organizing a protest and it's going to happen, you know, in the next week. We don't have the date pinned down yet, but it's going to happen in the next week. And I really start paying attention because a part of me is like, it's my job. Like I promised her that if she stepped out front, I would be behind her, right? I would be there to support her. She is passionate about these things that I was raised to believe were right. And so for one of the first times in months, I convinced myself to put my mask on. And my own daughter, my oldest daughter, said to me, you know, when I told her I was really kind of torn about what to do, she said, "Dad, you should just flip a coin and, you know, whatever, how you feel about the side of the coin that's up should determine whether or not you go." And she really wanted to go. So I think she was pulling for me to be like, "Okay, baby, I'm going to flip the coin." But I told her, "No, if you care that much about it, and all these other amazing young people who I know care so much about it, I'm going to go." And so I went out, and perhaps there were lots of other people who normally maybe stood on the sidelines or stayed home and tweeted about it or posted, you know, a passionate message on Facebook. They decided to step out. I decided to step out. I mean, I went out, like I said, with my mask, and I found myself saying, "Oh, you know, I'm going to try to be socially distant as much as you can at a protest." But man, 10 minutes into the walk, and it was like I was an organizer. I was, you know, chanting, and I was there in that moment following amazing leaders. So I think it was a combination of things. Chief among them, this moral clarity and call to action that was on display. And to turn your back or reject it would have been a betrayal of a lot of the values that we've heard people espouse for a long time. And so I think that's how we got to this moment. It was like, this was not a fluke. This was organization. This was strategy. This was a vision coming to fruition. So that's my piece. I'm going to stick to it.
I'll just add a little bit. From my perspective, I think it was, like you said, it's in the context of all that's happening right now. So, you know, we have everyone stuck at home. You know, we have millions of people, tens of millions of people who've lost their job. And people, you know, they're confused. We don't really have a national plan on what's going on. And then on top of that, you have this generation that already lives online all the time. They're on social media nonstop. They share everything. They're always on their phones. And so I feel like there was like maybe like a 2 to 3 week period when all of this really started. You know, they had the video about the Karen in Central Park, you know. Then a couple of days later was the Ahmaud Arbery. Then a couple of days after that was the George Floyd. Then a couple of days after that, what you heard about Breonna Taylor. So it's like we're all sitting at home, not doing anything, on our phones, where we have no option but to look at what's happening, and we can't hide from it anymore. We can't pretend that it's not there, because even in the midst of this global crisis, you know, people are still getting profiled. People are still facing these issues. So I feel like, you know, all the different aspects kind of was waiting for a spark. And with these videos being posted this time around, I think was exactly the spark, you know, that was needed to actually push some momentum into the change. And that's what you see. You see a lot of these corporate sponsors and a lot of these different entities finally responding to things that, I mean, you should have, you know, you think they would have noted, obviously, but out of nowhere, Black people exist in 2020. So now it's responding to our needs. But I mean, you know, there's progress. So, you know, you can't really complain about it, I guess. But at the same time, what were all the things that we had to get through to get to this point? The globe literally had to stop. You know what I'm saying? And like, we literally had to be stuck and have no option to look at it to actually make progress. And that's somewhat sad, you know? So,
yeah. You know, Jake, there's another kind of specific element of this, and I agree with everything John said like that. That he captured it very, very well, and I appreciate you putting all of that up. In terms of the decision about the flag, like that happened in our state legislature. I mean, we've gone through a lot of really wild stuff in Mississippi in the years that flag's been up. And every year, sometimes I thought every committee had a bill, you know, that could have made it to the floor to address this one issue. But it never happened. So I think there is some acknowledgement that should be made of the legislative leaders who didn't run and hide. They listened to constituents. They listened to members who had been singing the same song for 20, 30 years, a few of them. They accepted the challenge put before them. I'm not one of those people who believe that it was inevitable. I don't believe that. So I can credit in this small step needs to go to those people who responded to the call, who opened office doors when they closed to this issue in the past. That's the one thing. The second thing that I think contributed to it is the other options. I remember hearing it said years ago that one of the roles that art plays in society is it helps us imagine society in a different way or through a different lens. Lawrence Dennis's flag, a couple of the other flags that people put out there with magnolias and all kinds of stuff. They got a lot of traction. Lawrence's flag certainly got a lot of traction. And so I think it opens some people up to imagining who may not have shared the same legacy, right, as me, who didn't have enslaved ancestors, but in fact may have been enslavers. They got to see, okay, you know, there's another option out there, and there's some good energy that can come with that as opposed to hanging on to the old thing. And so I think those are just a couple of the things that contributed to this. And I certainly have some thoughts about how we use whatever momentum is created here to build more. But those are just the legislative leadership going from, no, we're not going to let a bill, let a resolution see the light of day, to, okay, if you can, you know, get the votes, we'll make it happen. To, I think, even some of those leaders helping whip votes, right? Those stories, you never know who really to believe in that. Certainly in the end, everybody was whipping votes if you let let them tell the story. But we know that was not the case in the beginning. So just in those people and what they got out of the way of, maybe, is important in this moment.
Yeah, I think... Well, there are a number of remarkable things about this. I think that, you know, we're talking about the rally that was held in front of the governor's mansion on June 6th that was put together in 5 days by a group of young Mississippians, young Black Mississippians who are all high school age or early college age, and is certainly the biggest crowd that I've ever seen. Mm-hmm. In downtown Jackson. That, you know, I think that resonated. I think that it, you know, certainly the state leadership, whether or not the governor was in the mansion at the time, I know that they saw that, and they saw that outpouring. And I think that made, often here in Mississippi, folks, especially folks that want to keep things the way they are, can look at change taking place in the rest of the country and say, oh, no, that's never coming to Mississippi. You know, that's going to stay up there in New York and stay out there in California, but things are different down here. I think that the importance of that turnout was showing that, no, there is a real deep hunger here in Mississippi. I think that there was an awakening by some of the leadership who had been resistant to change. I think that there was also an empowerment for a lot of the folks that attended and a lot of the folks that saw photos and saw videos, knowing that we're not alone here. You know, we've got strength, we've got numbers here, and that knowing that our leaders are young people, the next generation, the folks that will outlive everybody that's currently in office, that's a hopeful thing in terms of change. So I think that, you know, we've been content, our leadership's been content playing a waiting game in Mississippi for a long time. I don't know that they thought about it in these terms, but I think that what it signaled was they're not going to be able to wait out this new generation. You know, so change is going to come at some point. And you heard that in the legislative debate kind of come up. We can do this now. We can do it 6 months from now. We can do it years from now. Mm-hmm. But it's going to be much costlier the longer we wait. So we might as well just rip the Band-Aid off. Yeah. I think I don't think that is as palpable unless you have those young people in 5 days getting thousands of people to show up in downtown Jackson. Then you started to see
in other places.
Right. Yeah. I don't want to. Yeah. I think you saw, you know, you saw in Petal, you know, folks mm-hmm. showing up to protest the mayor there, all over the state. I mean, it's not an urban thing. Like it is distributed around the state. Folks have been showing up where they are. Mm-hmm. And as you said, Jay, like on social media, you know, like the online, you know, the online chatter about this has been, you know, very, very active. And those are things that legislators pay attention to. There are also things that, as you said, businesses pay attention to. There are things that the SEC and the NCAA pay attention to. And so the thing that we see after, you know, this rally is a lot of those organized groups coming out and making statements, but also using what leverage they may have to try to push Mississippi to make this change. I think I've said a long time, you know, one of the downsides, one of the many downsides of Mississippi's economic and social isolation is that there's not a lot of leverage that folks outside the state have to get us to change. If we dig in, you know, boycotts might work in Georgia or North Carolina, state that has a lot of, you know, businesses that are doing business nationally or globally. They're attracting, they're competing for talent, trying to get people to move from other places, hosting, you know, they got professional sports there. Because Mississippi doesn't have all that, and because we're not really trying to recruit people from outside, we, you know, folks here have less reason to care what they think, but there are also fewer levers to folks for folks outside the state to pull in order to get us to make necessary changes to sort of abide by national standards and norms. So the one exception to that is college athletics, is the SEC and the NCAA. You know, if they wanted to, they could really hurt the people of this state. And they didn't come out and say that they would go nuclear on it. But they did say that there would be consequences, more consequences than they've put on us in the past. I think that definitely got people's attention, and it made people realize here that, you know, they're probably only going to up the ante the longer we hold out. But yeah, you just, after that, you saw an outpouring. I mean, I think every association with more than 5 members in this state put out a statement calling for the flag to change. It wasn't just your usual suspects. This was, I think, something quite remarkable to watch. You saw that momentum build. And that produced votes. You know, that got people from being a no to being a maybe to ultimately being a yes. And, you know, this, I think this is a, you know, policy conversation. One of the policy hurdles, the legislative hurdles that they had to clear was the fact that because we're so late in the legislative session and because it's already been so disrupted by coronavirus, that they had to introduce this legislation through a suspension motion, suspending the rules, which takes 2/3 of the legislature of both houses to vote yay on. So whereas in the past it's been impossible to even get 50% plus one, now you got to get 2/3. And again, 2001, you had nearly 2/3 vote to keep the old flag. Now you got to get 2/3 of the legislature, which is, you know, Republican supermajorities, to vote to suspend the rules to even bring up the flag change for a vote. And so it really boggles the mind that something that you know, it's been this hard to do for so long. We did it under the most complicated circumstances, and it was still able to succeed. I think that shows just how much of a tidal shift there was. And really, I think you can, you know, it started in the last 3 weeks. Like it has happened so quickly that it's hard to even kind of put into words.
You know, I won't name individuals, but it was startling to me to read the statements of people. Nothing for them really changed. Just the total at the end of their calculation. Mm-hmm. None of the numbers changed. They just got a different result. And perhaps there are some lessons for us going forward, especially when we talk about policy, about like getting people to, like, let's get down to the nitty gritty, as they say. What really matters to you in this and why? There were statements from faith leaders that went into great personal detail. And I remember reading a couple of them, like, man, that's a lot. Mm-hmm. Like, where have you been all these years on this issue? Particularly when you have so many people who are looking to you for moral clarity. So, I mean, it was just there. I mean, that was just one. That was one of many that took that same kind of, these real changes of heart. It was fascinating to me. And I don't know. I hope, honestly, I hope that we don't face many other issues in this state where we see those kinds of shifts again. Because, unfortunately, I think it would tell me, I would read it as this huge gulf between our public faces, our private faces, the things that we say in public and even profess to value in public, and our deeper, more personal held beliefs. Like, I think as citizens, especially those who are in leadership positions, we need to really, really work hard and pray that those gaps close, you know, if we're to make any meaningful progress. There are certainly ways to say that a lot less tactfully. But I think it's something that we, as we try to bring people together to do more, we have to know that that's a possibility, and we have to work really hard to help people kind of crystallize the efforts in that way. Let's just close these gaps. Like, it's not cute to have a change of heart like that in a month, or in 4 or 5 years. It's just not cute. It looks good in the moment, but it's not going to look good in the eyes of history. So anyway, just need to drop that seed.
a very fair point. And yeah, and it should be noted that the one compromise that is credited with helping get the flag changed through is that the new flag cannot contain the Confederate battle flag, but it has to include the words "In God We Trust." I think the faith component of this, having the Southern Baptist Convention, for instance, come out and call for a new flag was, you know, that helped. That definitely moved some votes, pushed some people to vote. I think that the "In God We Trust" pulled some people across the line. It's probably not what, you know, it's not the cleanest flag change that we could have, you know, if we were just drafting it. But, you know, progress is really rarely tidy and clean. And I think we probably would have taken anything over the current flag. And I think that's how most of the longtime advocates felt. But yeah, the faith component of this, I mean, we're talking about Mississippi's two religions here. We're talking about, you know, Christianity, and we're talking about college football. Both coming in, pushing hard on this.
Yeah. Man, going to church on Saturday and Sunday.
That's right.
Sign me up. Now, you know, I think, and it's interesting because in those faith spaces, very few of those religious texts or, you know, the deities in those faiths, you don't see that big gap between what they instruct of their believers and what they shown in actions. Like I keep harping on that. When people stand before us as leaders, we have to challenge them to act on the convictions that they profess and not be afraid to test it. I mean, I can't stand in front of the high school students that I work with for very long and say anything to them if they don't see it in what I do, like if they don't see it in where I show up. I just can't get away with it for very long. And I think some of the dog whistles that have been used over the years have been just one of many examples of how people are allowed to profess one thing publicly and do another thing privately. And that is like, that does not know a racial boundary or a gender boundary. Like it's pretty universal in across identities. But it's really important as we move forward that we have, that we be prepared to not let the next big thing happen like this big thing did.
Mm-hmm.
It's like really important to maintaining momentum and integrity for us to do that.
I have a question though. I mean, do you think just to look at all of the momentum and the push that had to come just to get this one thing, do you not see that probably as going to that being the usual for the state, for our state leaders? Like, I mean, if there are more issues to come like this, this should, you know, pretty much set precedent. Because I mean, there are various issues across the state. You know, when you come to education, all kinds of different things. And you know, these people, they say that they're for the voters and they say that they're for the constituents, but they routinely, you know, cut funds to different departments. They routinely vote against their constituents' interests. So, I mean, I feel as though that you're probably going to see more of, you know, it'll take business interests to come in and then a lot of people are just going to change their minds. That's usually from, you know, just from my perspective of politics, I mean, people do that all the time, unfortunately. Granted, there is a value in changing your opinion when presented with new information, but when it's stuff that you had the information about forever, you know, you just never had the will to or the push to. And so I don't know. I'm hoping that, you know, more leaders are like you said, will actually stand on the you know, what they profess. But it seems like this is probably going to be the usual for at least here in Mississippi.
Yeah. It's a lot of spend on it. I think it is, I don't know if it's naive. I mean, most listeners are not naive about it. I just think the more we say it, the better off we may be.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, we woke up this morning with just as many people living in poverty as were yesterday, just as many people lacking health care or food, you know, just as many, maybe more suffering from COVID. The way things are going. And so, in all of those respects, we're in the same state that we were yesterday. This doesn't change anything. And yet, I certainly, you know, it certainly feels very different. And I think that, you know, if you've been on Twitter and you've seen the emotional outpouring, a lot of people are feeling something right now. So I guess our question is, like, what really is that feeling? Like, is that more than skin deep? And how does it affect or interact with those more material concerns in the state? I think getting to where you want to go with this, Vaughn, like, where, how do we use that momentum?
Man. I think that certainly, you know, you mentioned the how impressive the protests were. They were impressive in terms of the number of people who showed up, but they were also impressive in terms of the cross section of Mississippi that showed up. That was an impossible thing to ignore. And the places that folks had the courage to organize a protest. So I think that some people probably got to use muscles of coalition building and, you know, dialoguing with folks, quote unquote, not like them, that they really had not used before. I mean, I'm sure there are people on their Facebook pages and Instagram feeds or what have you who found that they were in solidarity with some people that they weren't used to being in solidarity with. And in my opinion, I think some of the issues that we've raised, I mean, Jerry and at different points have raised different ones, there's more consensus around those than I think many people believe. I think there are some misconceptions that need to be kind of addressed. And we have talked often about some of the major education initiatives, one that made the ballot not that long ago, how there was a big discrepancy in reality of where school-age Mississippians go to school and where people think they go to school. So there are some knowledge gaps that can be filled. I do think the issue of the flag, though, for a long time has been maybe not a Trojan horse, but it's certainly been this thing that has had the ability to frustrate movements, frustrate movements in the legislature around other issues. It's polarizing, right? And it became a purity test, whether politicians want to admit it or not. It seemed to have been like a purity test in a lot of different races. So certainly the enthusiasm gaps, right, around certain campaigns, people felt they could predict it based on whether or not the flag was an issue that came up in that race. If that were not the case, you wouldn't have had so many statewide office candidates running from the issue of the flag for so long. So, I mean, I think there's some, we've gotten some practice using the muscles of talking with folks and being engaged publicly. Like, it's, at some point it was hard to kind of hide behind, oh, I'm not paying attention, because everybody was talking about it. Where do you stand on this? I think that's really good for engaging the public in these other discussions, because your budget is a moral document, right? Just like for many, their stance on the flag was a moral issue. So we just have to help them see that more clearly. And I mean we, like the collective, we need to help people engage their values with the policies that they support in a more open way, perhaps than we've done before. And I think this, the way the flag has worked out has created a space for people to do that more. I hope I'm right. If I'm not, you know, it'll be the status quo. But if I'm right just a little bit, in this state, a little bit goes a long way in terms of positive change.
For me, I think there's a very, there's a balance that I guess we have to look at between if these changes are actual, you know, material changes or if they're just performative. Another recent change that from outside of the state in New York, that, you know, it's a great step, but, you know, we're still working on it. But the Breonna's Law that they signed, you know, preventing no-knock entry by police officers. So, like, for in that example, yes, that's a great step. That's definitely something that, you know, would prohibit issues like this in scenarios like hers. However, the officers still haven't been charged. So it's like, yeah, we're getting, you know, they're giving us a little bit, but it's like, what's the meat of this discussion that we're supposed to be having? What is the real implications and the real step forwards? So with this flag situation, although I do believe that, you know, it creates a space. It, you know, it's not a in your face divider anymore. You know, when, from the perspective of outside of Mississippi, you know what Mississippi stands for because of the flag. You don't need to have any other discussion. Just look at the flag. And so since that has been taken out of the equation, then there is, you know, now it's like, okay, well, Mississippi has made this step. And that's worth looking at. So, you know, I think it's a much needed and a material change, but there has to be the momentum. I'm hoping that momentum led to this, but this also in and of itself serves as momentum for other things.
Yeah, I think the question is, and really, I mean, we're talking about, you know, the folks that have shifted on this have been white Republicans over the last few weeks. Nobody really else has changed their mind on this. And, you know, we're our starting point in talking about what led to those changes is the Black Lives Matter protests here and around the country over the last few weeks. You know, those protests have been animated by and have called for much more systemic changes than just the flag. Now, here locally, the flag was what the organizers of that rally put on their agenda, their list of demands. They did center it. It was number one. But there were a list of other things, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, that haven't gotten as much discussion lately. And so because this has been an all hands on deck effort to get this flag changed, here in the state, we've not really been talking about police violence. We've not been talking about criminal justice. We've not been talking about education. Even, you know, with a pandemic raging, we've not been talking about healthcare as much or Medicaid expansion. Mm-hmm. And so because it has been such a difficult thing and because it is such a, you know, a high intensity issue in the state, it's sort of required this, you know, it's just naturally sucked all the oxygen out. But yeah, if we're talking about the genesis of this, we are, you know, we are saying, like, you know, this is just one of a list of things. And I think the question is, have those people that have been, that got persuaded on the flag, do they see it as part of a list, or do they see it as a one-off? And that's where I don't know. And I think that's where, you know, organizing is required. A lot of it is going to hinge on, you know, I think where a lot of white liberals go on this, folks that have gotten very passionate about the flag and have been for a long time and have been, you know, super keyed up, have been, you know, emailing, calling, putting legislators on blast about this. Are they going to keep that energy up for the next issue on the list? If they don't, we kind of revert, I think, to the status quo. Now, this status quo is definitely better than the one we were in before because we don't have that flag anymore. However, it doesn't address the problems that started this latest iteration of of movement building. So, yeah, I think that I will say, I think that when you try to imagine the challenge of lifting kids out of poverty in Mississippi, desegregating schools, of achieving educational equity, of providing health care to everybody in this state. I mean, these are big, daunting, complex issues that are sort of deeply shaped by racism, past and present, classism. It's really hard for me to imagine us creating the will to do anything about those things and not being able to change the flag. So in that sense, I think that it had to precede us having the capacity to do anything on a bigger scale, on a more material scale. And so in that sense, it's necessary, but it's not sufficient. Changing the flag alone won't solve those things, but it's really hard for me to imagine solving those things without also being able to change the flag. So,
there's another interesting kind of framing for the issues that you just rattled off. The way that they've been framed in the past have always been about, well, they've been derisively framed as a redistribution of wealth. The starting premise is that the pie is only so big, and that if we do this or we do that, then we're going to be moving from one piece of the pie to the other. The argument that many of the business leaders and even the people who, when they travel to Colorado or New York, want to be prouder of their beloved Mississippi, they say it's hurting us. It's limiting our potential, which, you know, you that is subscribing to the notion that there's something we can do to expand the pie. I think that is the way we have to make sure progress on these other issues that bring us closer to equity, closer to wholeness, closer to the living our full potential. We have to make sure that they are framed that way, that these are things that actually expand the pie. When you have a healthier citizenry, people, you know, they start businesses better. Like, they have the physical and health wherewithal to be creative and follow through on their ideas and dreams. I mean, that is really the way we have to think about it and make sure that it's framed. I think it was a big factor in why this happened. I mean, almost all of the people who switched their votes at some point said, you know, it'll just do so much for us. I just don't want to hear of another business who refused to come here. Like, we get all of that. We need to expand the pie, and having the battle flag of Northern Virginia on our state flag limited our ability to do that. Well, having a shooting for just an adequate education system that gets underfunded, whose formula gets unfunded by billions of dollars, is also limited. So I think our conversation needs to be seasoned with a lot of that, expand the pie, as opposed to simply redistributing the slices that we already have.
I think we'll be talking about these and these issues plenty in the coming weeks and months and years. But for purposes of this conversation, how about we wrap up with just a few final thought or two about, you know, what this means?
I think this means that there is a path forward. You know, despite all the stereotypical thoughts about Mississippi, despite all of, you know, what we know as far as the racial situation here in the state, there is a path. Mississippi is a part of the United States. So, you know, anything that can happen in another state, it could happen here. I think that's what this is showing. It might be a small start, but it is a start that the state needed.
So. Yeah, I'm with you on that, Jerry. And I think it is, I'm reminded, I'll paraphrase the quote from Miss Fannie Lou Hamer, you know, God bless her soul. You know, sometimes it feels like, you know, she talks about just how hard it feels sometimes. And when it's done, she just wants to make sure that she falls, 5 feet, 4 inches forward in the fight for freedom, you know, and she says, I'm not backing off. I think that's kind of where we need to be. Like, we need to make sure that every day, we are contributing to kind of making sure that things move forward. And that is true without regard to party or race or ethnicity. I think that's where we need to be. We need to be focused. So that's going to really be my litmus test for having confidence and expecting good things to happen. That I'm going to get up every day with that commitment, tell the truth and fall, you know, as she said, 5 feet, 4 inches forward. You know, for me, it's half. I think a lot of us can approach the state committed to that, and we'll find a lot of people to come along with us as we do that.
Yeah, I think this for me, it's the, you know, changing the flag has always seemed like just the most obvious, common sense, square one thing we should do in this state. And yet at the same time, it felt like it was the hardest thing in the world to do. And so now that it's done, I'm ready to move on to tougher challenges. So, with that, I want to thank both of you, Vaughn, Jay. Look forward to our next conversation.